Welcome to another exciting episode of the Business of Digital podcast, featuring your hosts, Matt Siltala and Dave Rohr. Hey guys, excited to have everybody join us on another one of these Business of Digital podcast episodes. And today we kind of have a round two, Dave, if you're over there listening. How's it going, bud?
It is round two. There's big updates though, so yes. It makes sense.
And so what we're talking about is we did an episode a while back on the Google antitrust.
Almost 2 years, by the way.
Oh, has it been that long?
Literally almost 2 years to the day from recording to recording.
Well, this year has been an anomaly, so it's hard to believe that it's been 2 years, but this year is kind of like a blur anyway, 2020. But anyway, if any of those that have listened to the Google antitrust one before, we are going to be a pleasure to be joined with Steven Cernick. He's partner of Bona Law in Detroit, Michigan. And we also have Elmer Boutin, who is the SEO director at GTB, a Detroit area agency. And so, Steve, Elmer, grateful you guys are joining us again, and welcome.
Happy to be back.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having us.
No, this is excellent. And so I'm going to kind of just turn the reins over to Dave a little bit. He's put this together with you guys, and he's got all the fun questions to ask, so we'll just go from there. So take it over, Dave.
Yep, just in case. Elmer, do you want to do a quick intro? And then, Steve, I imagine you have to give your lawyer spiel as well at
yes.
the start. So I'll let you do your quick intro, just for those that haven't listened to the first one, and then we'll go from there.
All right. Well, I'll go first. So I'm Elmer Boutin. I'm SEO director at GTB, which is a Detroit area based agency. I've been doing digital marketing for over 20 years. I hate to say that too. Gee, hate to admit that I'm getting old. But I specialize in SEO, but I've done development, a lot of other things along the way. And obviously, because of what I do for a living, I am a big Google watcher. And this case is very, very interesting. So I'm very glad we're able to have Steve come in here and help us out, because he certainly has expertise in this area.
Well, Elmer, you said something that made me, this will make you laugh when you talk about how long you've been in the industry and how it ages you. When I tell my kids that I have Reddit accounts that are older than them, they're just blown away.
That's good.
All right, so this is Steve Cernick, and since Elmer and I went to school together way back when, he and I are the same age. I am an attorney at Bona Law. We're a small antitrust boutique, so we only do antitrust law, based out in La Jolla, California, but I'm in the Detroit office. And I've been doing this kind of work for about 30 years, started off at General Motors, and have done antitrust and have taught antitrust at a couple of different law schools here in the Michigan area as well. And yes, my disclaimer is that all the views that I'm expressing here today are my own, at least as of today. I get to change my mind, but they're certainly not necessarily the views of any past, present, or current employer or client of mine.
Thank you. Yeah, after we had Ruth on as the first lawyer, and she was like, she went into the long spiel. I was like, oh, wow, that makes sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anytime you guys are talking, and gals. I think the very first question would probably make sense is to go into the formal complaint from the DOJ. And I believe there's technically three claims that they make. And that would make sense to get into. And for those that have not listened to the first one, if you're curious about EU and Google antitrust and a lot of stuff, there's about 40 minutes of us talking about a number of cases that have already happened. Feel free to go through. It's in the YouTube and it's on the site. It's number episode 78. Go listen to it before you continue listening now. But Steve, does that make sense to get started with that? Just the actual complaint?
Yeah, let me, yes, I'll do a little bit of antitrust 101, but I'm really going to be focusing here
that makes sense.
Complaint. So the Department of Justice, the Antitrust Division, so the, you know, the federal government, as well as many, but not all, state attorneys general, have sued Google, accusing them of monopolization under Sherman Act Section 2. So the idea is here is that Google is a monopoly. That's the first part, and that they are doing something to to maintain that monopoly. So there's, you know, needs to be both a noun and a verb here. And the idea is that they are acting badly, monopolizing a market for general search services, search advertising, and general search text advertising in the United States through various anti-competitive and exclusionary practices. To me, I think this boils down to a couple of things that the Justice Department's going to have to prove at a really high level. And that is, first, that Google is a monopolist, and we can talk about that. But then second, that, yeah, they are monopolizing, that the these actions that they are taking, you know, vis-a-vis Apple and the default search engine and, you know, anti-forking agreements on the Android device, that all of those add up to something that is not just harmful to other search engines, but actually harmful to competition. And so, you know, those are the two big questions that we'll have to talk about.
I'm just writing notes. Yeah, they, I forgot about the Android anti-forking part of it. And yeah, it's interesting.
It's not quite an afterthought, but it certainly comes second in the complaint. And I think it, in a sense, it is second. But it's interesting because it's, you know, it's something that obviously they've got some connection to because, you know, of their ownership of the Android software.
Yeah. And the noun and the verb is an interesting way to think about it, because we talked about it before and you just mentioned it now. You can't just have a lot of market share. You can't just be the largest. You actually have to have the largest and do something. And did the DOJ kind of talk in the claims and what they said under Sherman Act 2, what Google's done?
Yeah. So on the verb parts, let's talk about the verb, but let's remember, put a pin in it. Let's make sure we go back and talk about the noun at some point as well. But, okay. But yeah, the verb is exclusive dealing. That is, and this is a fairly standard antitrust claim. That is that you've got, you know, somebody who's got a large market share and they, you know, tie up the key suppliers or they tie up the key distribution points, and they foreclose a large share of either the supply or the distribution, and so their remaining smaller competitors can't reach the market or don't have an access to an input that they really need, and so, you know, that's a fairly standard argument. Here, the exclusive dealing arrangement that the Justice Department is focusing on is Google's exclusive default search engine arrangement with Apple. That is that Google spends a lot of money, pays a lot of money to Apple to be the default search engine on the iPhone, and that is preventing Bing, DuckDuckGo, others, you know, any other general search engines from reaching the market, from being able to, you know, get the searches that they need in order to both build the scale and be successful, but also to, you know, get all of these searches so that they can, you know, their algorithm gets better and smarter. And so people will say, yeah, you know, I get just as good a search result on Bing or DuckDuckGo, you know, as I did on Google. So, you know, that's the verb. That's the allegedly bad thing that's stopping those other competitors from being as good as they would otherwise be. And, you know, that's the alleged harm.
That's interesting, though, Steve, because Matt, Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, but did not Apple have an agreement with Microsoft before they had the agreement with Google for Microsoft to provide their search results? So, you know, that being the case, you know, is the fact that Microsoft could outbid Google and theoretically, when their contracts ended, become the default search for Apple, does that necessarily negate that argument?
I don't think it necessarily negates it, but yeah, that is I'm sure going to be one of Google's defenses. That is, hey, you know, we're not stopping you know, our competitors from outbidding us. And it's not like at least one of our competitors you know, is a huge, you know, competitor, and, you know, they've got money to spend. So I think that that's one of Google's strong defenses. I think the other one is the one, you know, you and I were kibitzing about before we turned on the recording. And that is okay. But does this default, really stop others, stop users from using other search engines? You know, can't I, you know, make Bing my default search engine? Or if Google's my default search engine, can't I use Bing or DuckDuckGo, you know, anyway, in at least in some certain searches? And I think that, you know, that's going to be a key factual question that, well, you know, that you guys might have a better sense of than I do. But I think that's one that, you know, we're really going to be interested to see, you know, how it gets argued out in the court.
The interesting thing would be about the, I think you were right, Elmer, I think it was Bing. But I think the reason why Google can outbid Bing is, one, they're more invested because all their money comes from Google or from search. But I think because they have a larger base of advertisers per search, they make more money. So per search coming from Apple, Bing doesn't make as much money. So, you know, if they're making 5 cents per search in theory through ads, but Google's making 15, Google can really double the bid. And Steve, through their scale, right, you know, then their monopolistic, you know, when I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. Through their large scale of advertisers and users, they have an advantage. And just to talk about it, because the last time we talked about these numbers, it was 2 years ago. As of most recently, and I'll drop in, it's StatCounter, Android is 73% of the market for OS for phones, and Apple is 26.5. So when you combine that, by Google being in the default for both of those, 99.5% or so of phones that are shipped go with Google as the default.
Yeah, exactly. So the question is, you know, how difficult is it for Bing or DuckDuckGo to reach the customer if Google is the default search engine for nearly 100% of the mobile phones? And the point here, though, is, and we get this from the old Microsoft case, that the Justice Department, you know, does not need to prove that it's, you know, actually, you know, impossible. It's just that it's going to be so difficult for customers to, you know, use Bing or to, you know, default to Bing or DuckDuckGo, that they will never get that, you know, that scale that they need. And because they don't have the scale, their algorithm will never learn as much or as well or as quickly as Google's does. And so their search results will never be quite as good. And so they'll never be able to catch up, all because, you know, they make it, Google makes it so difficult to, you know, for customers to use these other search engines.
I know you can't speculate, so I'm just trying to think how to phrase things that doesn't require speculation in any way. Elmer, did you have another question?
Well, it's interesting that we're looking at this, and we talk a lot about the Microsoft antitrust case from so many years ago. But, you know, it seems that back then, you know, Microsoft was and still is for the OS for most computers, I think most desktop computers. They were forced to make it easier to let you install other browsers, which, you know, back in the day, you know, floppy disks was pretty much the only way to do it. Now it's so easy, you can just download it and install them. Another browser is pretty easy. But I'm kind of wondering if the tables haven't turned a bit, because I imagine that Google probably argued on the side of the Justice Department at that point to say, oh yeah, Microsoft's, you know, monopolizing the browser. Look at this. We're not able to get Chrome in there. Now Chrome is the dominant browser and Google's the dominant search. And now, you know, I can just see kind of Microsoft poking in just a little bit and jumping in on that side. You know, it's kind of interesting to see how this has come full circle in that respect.
Yeah, no, it definitely has. And at least according to a press report, so I'm not giving away the story here. It sounds like Microsoft is, you know, one of the people who've, who have been running into the Justice Department and saying, you know, this is a problem, and here's, you know, here's why. And certainly before the Justice Department brought this case, I know that they talked with all the other competitors as well as others in the industry, and I'm sure Microsoft is one of them. And yes, I suspect that was, you know, part of the story that Microsoft gave. But it is interesting going back to the old Microsoft case, and yeah, you're right. And when, once again, we're showing our age. When I teach the Microsoft case to students these days, they think of it as ancient history. I tell them, you know, what the issue was, that, you know, Microsoft was, you know, the forcing all the internet service providers, you know, like AOL, you know, to have the Internet Explorer as the default browser, and having exclusive arrangements with computer manufacturers, so Dell and Compaq and all those other places, all those other manufacturers, and that made it so difficult for Netscape to get its browser out there, because you didn't download browsers or any other software then. What you did is, you know, you got these floppy disks or the CDs, and I'm sure we all remember getting those free things in the mail and throwing them away, or really, to date ourselves, to see the free ones there at the cash register when you walked, you know, bought something at CompUSA. And yeah, you could get a free Netscape a browser and load it. But that was so much more difficult for Netscape to do, to, you know, to reach the customer, that the courts then said, yeah, that Microsoft has actually made it so difficult, they've monopolized, continued to monopolize that market. And so now, yes, you're right, they've made it easier for computer manufacturers and others to put different browsers on. But, you know, it's also, yeah, the technology has changed. It's a lot easier now to download a browser or download other software. We all do it all the time. That's going to be one of the factual questions. You know, is it that it's so difficult to change your default search engine or to use another search engine, even if it's not your default, that these other search engines cannot reach the customers in the same way that Netscape could not reach the customers 25 years ago?
I just read today that someone was talking about the fact that the Google antitrust happened, and the Microsoft case happened, it actually opened up the door for a search engine named Google to get access. And here we are almost 20, 25 years later, and that company and tool and search engine that came out of that is now in the same position. It's kind of weird. Yeah. Talk about really going full circle.
Yeah, no, it really has. Well, and the Justice Department started off their complaint with that, you know, Google was a scrappy little company. Not anymore. They're a monopolist.
Yeah. Do you want to go back to the noun? We've been talking about the verb. You wanted to talk about the noun?
Yeah. So the Justice Department will have to show that Google is a monopolist. And in a way, you know, you've mentioned some of the numbers, Dave, but in a way, this seems kind of easy. And yet I don't think it necessarily is, and certainly it's going to be something that Google is going to contend with. Now, so the market that the Justice Department has defined is a market for general search services. So they've excluded, you know, for instance, Amazon, and excluded Expedia from searches, and, you know, so, and because of that, then, you know, Google has an awful lot, has a very high market share. And of course, the Justice Department, you know, points out that, you know, to Google has become a verb because it's, you know, such a commonplace occurrence. But I'm sure Google is going to make two arguments on this side. You know, first that, okay, you know, we do compete in search with Amazon, Expedia, or, you know, others, out there, these other specific special search engines. But then I'm sure, because they've said this practically every time they issue a press release, I'm sure they're going to say, and by the way, yeah, even if we do have a high market share, competition is only a click away. And you know, anybody can go ahead and very easily you know, use another search engine. And because of that, you know, while we might have a high market share, that usually means that we've got monopoly power. That usually means we're a monopolist. But you know, here, even if we have a high market share, we really don't have that power. You know, we don't have that power to raise price. We don't have the power to raise price, you know, on free searches. So I think that you know, Google will not give up on that. Will not you know, stipulate that yes, they're a monopolist and just worry about whether they're monopolizing things. And instead, I think they will you know, try to push back on whether they're actually a monopolist or not.
So I wonder if we look at this from another angle too. So I have an iPhone. I just pulled up, I use Chrome. I prefer that as my browser. But I looked in the settings for Chrome. It is two clicks to change my default search engine in Chrome, which is Google's product. So I kind of wonder, Steve, if you think that might play into it as well. It's like, look, you know, you are saying that we're a monopolist, but yet in our own products, we make it fairly easy for people to change if they want to.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely going to be key. I think that's probably going to be key in the verb part, that the monopolizing part. But I do think, you know, even in the noun part, you know, just the idea that, you know, gosh, even if we've got, you know, 94% or whatever of all of the search engine results, you know, we have to keep doing well because other competitors are really, you know, one click or, as you point out, maybe just two clicks away. And, you know, if we don't do really well and continue to, you know, better serve our customers, those who are doing searches, you know, we're going to lose out.
I think that is a good segue, Elmer. The 94% number you just mentioned is Moz. Thank you, Dr. Pete, for sending that over to me. I totally missed that. They did a study of 2 million search results. There was almost 800,000 videos. They looked at the three positions. So if you do a search for, like, I don't know, how to tie your shoe or something, anytime you most likely ask how or something, you'll see a video. Of those times that a video popped up in the one, two, or third slot, basically 94% of the time, it was YouTube. YouTube is a company, a sub-company of Alphabet, who Google, you know, Alphabet owns. It's a sister company now to Google. I wonder, will these types of properties and how they leverage their own properties? So they own Elmer, Matt, someone, they bought the booking engine that basically Expedia and all of those other companies used for $750 million at one point, I think it was. If you talk to Angie's List, Thumbtack, Yelp, you know, the review sites or any of those other service sites, there's a number of other services that Google keeps rolling out and copycatting, or verticals that they just keep taking, and more of it is on their site or they take content. Will any of that, Steve, be brought in, do you think?
I think into this case that we're talking about now, that was brought by the Justice Department, I think yes, some of that will come in. But I think a lot of those questions were ones that the Justice Department did not bring in, at least at, you know, at this point. But remember, I told you the Justice Department and several attorneys general brought this case. There are many other attorneys general that are still looking at Google and looking at bringing cases. And the theories that you are talking about are ones that we know that they are looking at. You know, that is that either they are self-preferencing or they are tying, you know, one of their products to you know, the sale of one of their other products, you know, some other product in the Alphabet universe. And I think that if those kinds of claims do not come up in this particular case, it would not be a surprise to see them in another case that, yeah, you know, that other AGs or other attorneys general are looking at bringing, you know, it's sometime probably in the next few months.
I think we've covered what the noun and the verb completely. What does, I don't know if you can speak to what does a win or loss look like for either the DOJ or Google. Can we talk about that?
Sure. You know, from the Justice Department standpoint, you know, they've talked about, you know, looking at some sort of, you know, not just behavioral remedy. I mean, so you can see something like a behavioral remedy that is, okay, Google, stop doing what you're doing, or you know, so stop being the exclusive search engine on Apple, or you know, something along those lines. That would seem to be, you know, remedy that they would look at. But the Justice Department is looking more at some kind of structural remedy. So, you know, I'm not exactly sure what that's going to look like, you know, how you would split up Google in some way. But certainly the Justice Department, the head of the Antitrust Division, who is not involved in this particular case, and is probably going to be leaving the Antitrust Division anyway, but has not been involved in this case because he did some work for Google before he went into the government. But the Justice Department more generally has expressed some skepticism about behavioral remedies, and you know, wanting instead to prove their case and then have a remedy that's just one time and done. You know, we you know, solve the problem by you know, changing the structure of the company in some way. So I think that's where the Justice Department would like to head if they can. But I think that's going to end up being difficult. You know, for Google, it, to me, this is just one front on a multi-front battle or war that they're fighting and will continue to fight, you know, with private plaintiffs, with other attorneys general that I've talked about. And, you know, as we talked about on the last time with investigations or lawsuits in Europe and elsewhere around the globe. So, you know, for them, if they can, you know, fight this off in some form or fashion in the next several months or more likely a few years, you know, that'll be great for them, but it won't be the last time that they'll have to do it.
Mr. Danny Sullivan's gonna come throw stuff at me. There is an article that he wrote, Elmer, 2011, and it's a fictional book, and I kept double checking. I'm pretty sure that he quote unquote fictionally wrote it, but it talks about the baby Googles, like Baby Bell breaking it up. Do you think, Steve, they could go that far?
Yes is the answer. Yes,
Could
they go that far? Yes, but you know what that looks like. What a baby Google looks like. You know, are we going to get, you know, Ameritech and Southwest Bell, and you know, like we did out of AT&T? What does that look like? I'm not sure. But you know, again, you guys might have a better sense of that or a sense of what that could look like than I do.
The thing that strikes me about that, while I think is great to talk about. When we're looking at organic search, natural search, I mean, that's a free service that Google provides in order to have a platform to serve ads on. Dividing that up may create a way that they would not be able to conduct business. And I'm kind of curious about that. So maybe from your perspective, Steve, you could comment on that. You know, if the government comes through and says, well, hey, this is the way you all need to break up. The Baby Bells was pretty easy, you know, because they all provided the same service. Basically, they just took and divided up geographically. You can't really do that with Google. So how would that work? How would they be able to even stay in business, I wonder?
Yeah, no, I think you would not obviously divide them up geographically, but, you know, could you create, you know, two or three different, you know, general search engines and let them go fight it out? I think at that point, Google's going to say, hey, you know, the end result is likely to be that, you know, one of them is going to be become the dominant search engine, and we'll be back to where we were. And so, you know, that remedy, it you know, doesn't get you what you really want. You know, if at that point, if Google has sort of lost the case and now we're arguing about what the remedy is, you know, I think their argument is going to be, you know, it should be behavioral in some way. You know, okay, yeah, we won't be the default search engine on an iPhone, because anything else is going to be a huge change to Google, and it might not actually end up in the long run, you know, providing the relief that the Justice Department has asked for.
I think the next question would be, since we're starting to go down a bit of in theoretical, what the EU has brought more cases, I think, now. I know we talked about some cases in the past about shopping and Android, and last time Google was appealing something last time we talked in the EU. Is there anything in the EU that they've done against Google that would likely or could be used here? Any steps or any of the things that they've, you know, talked about?
Yeah, I don't think it would be
one-to-one.
What they've done in Europe is what I was calling sort of behavioral remedy, and that is, but that's really more focused on self-preferencing. That is, that, you know, Google needs to display the results in a certain way that does not necessarily favor some other Google product, but it allows other other results to come through in a better way, so those claims, that kind of remedy is what you could see here for these different claims that the Justice Department has brought. But I think the same kind of claims of self-preferencing or tying their products together are probably the claims that the other attorneys general are looking at. And so I wouldn't be surprised if you see, you know, sort of a U.S. version of that EU case, you know, coming down the pike.
Interesting. And then, as we all know, and you know better than us, what are the next steps? And, like, you know, is this going to happen in our lifetime? Is it going to happen before 2030? Like, how long is this going to take?
Yeah, they're going to try to move it along, expeditiously. So they've Google and the Justice Department and the AGs have already met, virtually or remotely over Zoom. With a judge there in D.C. It's a judge who's been involved in antitrust cases in the past. He's also been involved in, along with me, in the ABA antitrust law section. So he knows antitrust, and he's promised to move this along fairly quickly. Google's next step is either to answer the complaint, which says here's why the complaint is wrong, or to file a motion to dismiss, which is basically, if we don't need to get to the factual situation, just on the face of this complaint, the Justice Department didn't state it the right way. They didn't even state a legitimate claim. And Google has said that they will decide, fairly soon, probably mid-November, whether they are going to, do an answer or file a motion to dismiss. And then their answer is due early to mid-December. And so, if they file a motion to dismiss, that will get briefed and argued and, decided next year. I would say that the opinion on something like that would be mid to late 21. Or if they just decide to, file an answer, then you start going into a discovery, and that will be months worth of discovery, and then I'm sure a summary judgment motion, which would be, probably the end of next year, and then the judge makes the decision, probably months after that, and I'm sure it'll get appealed, that's when you're starting to talk about 2022, before we're getting something that is final, or at least close to final. I don't see, at least on these claims, I don't see something going to the U.S. Supreme Court. At least as the claims have been laid out, there's not a lot of new law or new theory or anything. I don't think the Justice Department's breaking a lot of new ground. And that's what the Supreme Court's supposed to be looking at. I think if it plays out that this is just so factually intensive, it's just an argument about what the facts are. I can see this getting sorted out by 2020, you know, sometime in 2022. I think that's, you know, fairly aggressive, but, you know, the Justice Department and Google will want to move this along as expeditiously as possible. But, you know, even if that happens, as I said, there will be other suits from other attorneys general and private plaintiffs. So I don't think, you know, we're not going to be hearing the end of Google and antitrust for quite some time.
It's interesting. They spent 11 state AGs, the federal, spent 16 months building this. Is it really possible that Google could, you know, just say there's nothing here and it could be? Or do you think they're going to probably have to answer it to some extent just to try to get it going?
Yeah, I think many, I'll go so far as to say most defendants end up filing a motion to dismiss so long as they've got something to say.
Just to try to do it.
It's a swing for the fences. If you win, great. You know, you win right away. You don't have to spend a lot of money on discovery and the like. But also
buy yourself some time.
You buy yourself some time, but you also get a sense of, you know, you make the other side, you make the plaintiff respond to your complaint. To your arguments, and you know, maybe you narrow things. Maybe the judge says, okay, I'm going to let most of these claims go forward, but not all of them. Or here's why I'm letting it go forward. And so at least you get a sense of what the judge is thinking about. You know, so that can be worthwhile. You know, even if you end up losing, a motion to dismiss can be worthwhile to file.
So it's like me finding $20 in Vegas and just going, you know, 20 on black. And if I win, great. And if I don't, well, then, you know, I didn't really lose much.
Well, we all know that you wouldn't spend it on that. You'd spend it on beer, Dave.
I have no luck. I have no luck on the roulette tables the last couple of years. So no, I would not.
No, go to Vegas and start betting and they'll bring you the free beer, Dave.
There you go. It's not good beer, though. Elmer, do you have anything else? I think those were the main big things I wanted to talk about. I think we've covered most of it. Or Steve, is there anything else we missed or we didn't throw at you?
Well, there's one thing that I would like to have Steve address if he can, and that is, you know, what is the burden of proof that the Justice Department and the state AGs have to come up with? I mean, as I understand it, this is a civil case. Yeah. And how does that play into the proceedings? I mean, you mentioned the motion to dismiss could be a swing for the fences, but how does that fit into the whole thing, the burden of proof aspect?
Yeah, on the motion to dismiss, all the Justice Department has to prove is that their theory is plausible. Not probable, not likely, but plausible. And so, you know, that's a pretty easy hurdle to get over. And so that's why I think that so long as you're the plaintiff or the Justice Department here is not breaking any new ground, that's probably something they get by. But then they've got to show that, you know, all of these actions have harmed competition, that it's, you know, there's it's more likely than not that competition has been harmed by the actions of this monopolist. So, you know, actions and monopolist, verb and noun. Yes, that's a lower standard than a criminal standard, but it's still going to be difficult for them to prove that. And certainly the last, 15, 20 years, it's been difficult for any monopolization plaintiff to win. And, you know, that helps to explain why you don't see too many monopolization claims by the Justice Department, you know, against big companies. First, I think the Justice Department usually thinks that, you know, their actions really are not monopolizing. But second, even if they thought that that it was, you know, it's a difficult standard. It's difficult to prove monopolizing. You know, generally, antitrust law, as it's interpreted today, you know, does not want to step into the marketplace unless it's got a pretty good idea that, you know, the government in the form of the court stepping in is going to improve competition and not just mess it up in some way, including through unintended consequences. So, you know, the err on the side of making sure that, you know, the letting the market take care of itself. So, you know, that will be what the Justice Department is going to have to overcome in giving the judge, or then later on the appellate court, confidence that, yes, this is one of those rare circumstances when it's worthwhile you know, stepping in, having antitrust law step in and change the way the market is acting.
Yeah, I just don't know what that's going to look like. We talked about breaking up and different things. I think it's going to be, I don't even know. It doesn't make sense to break it up, but we'll see. At least not from this.
Well, I think that means I wouldn't be surprised, Dave, if we would still have plenty to talk about, not just 6 months, but even 2 years from now on this particular case.
Well, yeah, and you said it, and I read about it earlier, that just there's, what do we say, 11 or 12 AGs, and there was one or two other groups just in the U.S., and there's more probably in the EU that are saying that the last time they did something, Google basically didn't change anything, and now the EU, I guess, is looking at more for Google because they're like, they paid this $4 billion fee and didn't change any behavior, really.
Yeah,
nothing has changed because of all that stuff. So,
and the way this has played out, most or all of the attorneys general that joined this particular lawsuit were Republican. There are other attorneys general that are Democrats that are looking at bringing their own suit. That suits would probably get combined, but maybe not, depending on exactly what the claims are. And if we do get a Biden administration, it's certainly possible that they change this lawsuit in some way, amend it or withdraw it and then refile it. But I think more likely they continue to pursue it and the other Democratic state attorneys general jump in and we get an even bigger, broader case against Google with more claims and more plaintiffs. I suspect this is only going to grow for the foreseeable future before it starts, shrinking or before we figure out what the end game might look like.
Last question. Would that be good for Google or bad, or good for the DOJ or bad if it was to grow? Is it, then becomes like a scattered, like we're just throwing as many things up against the wall, or is that actually hurt one side or the other?
Yeah, no. Those are great questions. And, I'm sure all sides have thought about it, and I don't think there's an easy answer for either defense or the plaintiff. Yeah, because if you're the plaintiff, you're the Justice Department, you kind of like to have your own case, and you know how you're going to run it, and somebody else comes in, and they want to run it or have their own case, and it's a slightly different, or maybe more than slightly different. Yeah, that could be confusing, even conceivably, some evidence might help you but harm the other plaintiff's case or vice versa. On the Google side, I don't know. I mean, you'd probably like to have, fewer forums where you have to fight. And so if you know that the other AGs are going to bring their lawsuit, maybe you want them to bring it in and consolidate it. And, at least we have one big battle here rather than lots of little ones. But if you have one big battle, boy, you'd better win.
Yeah, I think for Google, to me in my head, would you, it's almost that question, do you want to take on like one big, fill in the blank, or 100 of these little things? For Google, it's probably, I'd rather take on one big fight, because then, like you said, anything that one side or the other could hurt themselves. Because if they're trying to attack them on 8 different things, one might cancel out the other, and then in the end there's really nothing to standing. We'll see.
Could be.
Matt, Elmer, Steve, anyone else?
No, otherwise, super insightful.
Call it a day and we'll reconvene in another year.
Really, I'll put it on my calendar. Insights.
This the same time, same bat channel, another year from now.
Well, 2 years, you said, remember?
Well, we'll probably have something maybe in a year. Who knows? There's Facebook and Amazon still, so who knows what we could talk about.
The FTC is looking at both of those. And
I'm sure they are.
Supposedly, we'll hear something maybe even still this calendar year. So there's plenty of talk to talk about.
Nothing you sell on Amazon won't be reproduced by Amazon within weeks. So, hey.
Oh, man. Well, guys, thanks again. And just a quick reminder to everyone listening, we are on iTunes, so make sure go and give that a 5-star rating. We appreciate your love, and that's how we keep bringing these to you. But for Steve and for Elmer and Dave, I'm Matt. And thanks, guys, for joining us. And we will hit you back on the next one of these. Bye-bye, guys.
And do look at the write-up. Dear God, how many notes I have and how many links. So
do that, too, yes.
There will be a ton if you want to learn, you know, what everything is. So
thanks,
and
all.
Again, thank you, Elmer. Thank you, Steve, for your time.
Yes.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you for having us.
Bye.